and welcome to a special episode of Inside the Helmet, although can't really, maybe Inside the Helmet is not the right term this week, as we're joined with Jason Penix, Director of Grassroots Initiatives, and recent field promotion to the Mazda Road to Indy King, thanks to Anders Krohn, who does a lot of good helping out the young talent that come up through that program, not just in his example of driving, but in what he does outside of the cockpit as well. Jason, thank you very, very much for joining us today.
Oh, no problem. I appreciate the opportunity. Always a pleasure to speak with you.
This time, you know, we've spoken with you several times in the past, but today I'd really kind of like to look at the past, present, and future of the Mazda Road to Indy program, now coming into, I believe, its third year?
Correct.
The very first year that it was formed hadn't quite signed Mazda yet, although they are kind of out there. But even before that, lead us through what the impetus was for the formation of the Mazda Road to Indy program, who the prime movers were in getting it all pieced together, and you know, kind of what the reactions were then of the teams to this idea of a formal ladder system.
Oh yeah, it you know, originally in Tony George Jr., myself, you know, I've always had a very vested interest in the young drivers and the young talent that's coming up through the IndyCar system. And we looked at the system that was in place at the time, and we had Firestone Indy Lights as an in-house development system. Outside of that, there were plenty of great series out there. It was just a matter of saying, okay, if I'm a young driver, how do I get there? What's that roadmap? And so we really decided there needed to be that roadmap in place, and we needed to do it right away. And we were coming off of unification of the two open wheel series at the time, and thought it was a great time to do that. So we sat down and figured out, hey, you know, how do we pave this? And the Road to Indy was a program that originally started in the Indy Racing League's early days, more tied to the USAC side of things. But we thought, hey, what better name than the Road to Indy? And started building from there, and really tried to go out and identify what those strongest you know, steps or series were to make up that path. We knew that Dan Anderson in the 90s had a very successful 2-liter program. And so that was very easy for us to say, hey, we want to do that again if Dan would be interested. And so all it took really were about one or two conversations with Dan, and I think Tony had him hooked, and the rest is history there for that series. Obviously, Star Mazda, I think this year is in its 22nd year of competition, and you know, a very quality series that has a long list of graduates. So we felt like that was a natural next step. And when a driver comes out of there, they're certainly ready for Firestone Indy Lights, and you know, we already had that series in-house. So really was pretty quick to decide what that path was going to be. Obviously talked to a lot of folks and consulted with a lot of folks before that, but pretty much knew the direction we wanted to go. And thankfully Dan and Dan Anderson, Gary Rodriguez, and then in-house here with Indy Lights, everybody said, yeah, this is, you know, too good to pass up. So it was a pretty quick and painless process.
Well, once you formed it, you started out just as the Road to Indy, and
correct,
that was it. Later, and in fact, I think we talked about this at Mid-Ohio, the year that it formed. Later, Mazda came in. It seemed to everyone at the time that Mazda should be a slam dunk, especially with the Star Mazda series involved and with the Mazda engines being used in USF 2000. How early did those conversations with Mazda really get started?
I would say we probably had the program up and running about 6 to 8 months or so. But before, you know, we really got to talking with those guys about being involved. I mean, obviously, we knew of their interest in the development series, and they knew what we were trying to do. It was just a matter of making it work for both sides. But, yeah, really pretty quick, 6 months in, you know, we were talking about it. And I think almost a year to the day later, they came on as title sponsor partner of that program. And what better partner to have? I mean, those guys are dedicated to the grassroots side of our sport. And I've done so much for open wheel racing, let alone everything they've done in sports car racing. So a very natural fit, and it was very quick to come together, and we really, you know, both parties saw a ton of value in the program.
Well, you'd mentioned Dan Anderson as one of the initial key people, key personnel in getting this put together. Of course, he had the USF 2000 series before, and now it's come back. First year, I think we had, what, single-digit grids, I think 8 or 9 cars on track that very first year. But now here this past Winterfest, just in the Winterfest, we had, what, 20 entries and 18 cars actually take to track. how key has Mr. Anderson actually been to the growth and popularity of that particular series, of the USF 2000 series?
Oh, I think it's huge. I mean, Dan, you know, whether it's a racing series or a racing team that Dan's operated, everything's first class. Everybody saw what he did with the, kind of the first go-around for F2000 here in the United States, and it was a hugely popular series. So I think there was no question in everyone's mind that he was the right man to kind of lead the charge at that level, and he's done so again. And you talked about the growth of that series. It's been huge, and it's probably a year or two ahead of pace, honestly, of where we thought it would be. But it's a very cost-effective series to be involved in. It's a great entry point. You get to run with IndyCar on multiple weekends. And you know, it's just a great place for a driver to start their career if their goal is IndyCar and the Indianapolis 500.
This year, you've introduced something new. Well, the USF 2000 series has introduced something new. The inclusion of the Formula Enterprise cars, formerly the Pro Series Formula cars in the SCCA. Last year at Baltimore, we saw a large influx of the Formula Continental cars, the national class cars. Now, with also being able to use the Formula Enterprise cars, have you seen a big uptick in interest in the national class as opposed to the championship class, which we already know there's a large amount of interest in?
Yeah, it's been great. It's a nice boost to the national class, and it provides an even more cost-effective way to get into the series. You know, I think budgets could be as low as, you know, 70 to 80 grand now. To be involved at that level when you go out and get that Formula E car. So, you know, it's a much more cost-effective way to get in, despite what we feel like is a pretty cost-effective series on its own anyway. And then it allows, you know, other folks to be involved that may have not had that opportunity beforehand.
Now, inclusion of a third type of chassis, are we perhaps running the risk of having a multi-class race as opposed to one USF 2000 series race? What concerns are there in terms of reaching parity between the three types of categories?
I actually think that you know, the work they've put into it thus far, they've done an excellent job of you know, parity between those three groups and classes. You know, they really wouldn't have done it if they didn't think there could be parity there. I don't want to speak too much for Dan and his staff, but it's a first-rate group that they know what they're doing. They've done a lot of testing. They've had you know, drivers that have been very successful in the open wheel development system come back and test those cars for them and give them that feedback. So, you know, I think they're going to do a great job. And I think we saw a little bit of that with the Winterfest here. But really, as we get into St. Pete and move on through the schedule, I think you'll see that there really shouldn't be too much gap in competition there.
The reason for being, I guess, really is for this program to graduate drivers up into the IZOD IndyCar series. It seems like we've seen a fair amount of graduation, people moving up from one series to the next. We've seen Petri Svanto now moving up into Star Mazda. Sage Karam and Zach Veach have moved up into Star Mazda. Trying to think of drivers that have moved from Star Mazda to Firestone Indy Lights. But we've certainly seen, well, Anders Krohn, of course,
sure.
And, you know, we've seen Indy Lights drivers move up to the IndyCar series. What are your thoughts on the graduation rate? Are you moving up drivers as quickly as you'd like, or do you want the pace to be a little quicker?
I think, you know, I'm pretty comfortable with where we're at right now, honestly. You know, I think as we look at Indy Lights this year, I think we'll see a minimum of three Star Mazda drivers make the jump up Indy Lights, and I think that's a nice percentage. You know, guys outside of just that champion are finding opportunity at the next level, so that's very exciting. Obviously, if you look above that from Indy Lights to the IZOD IndyCar Series, you know, James Hinchcliffe, Charlie Kemble, J.R. Hildebrand are all guys that have come from that system. You know, Graham Rahal spent time in the system. Marco Andretti did his time as well. So, you know, even if it's not guys that have made the full progression through the ladder, just due to lack of time here, we have guys at the top level that have done a great job of utilizing it along the way. And then you look at kind of what we call our first class, and that's those guys like Sage Karam, Zach Veach, those guys that started out with us in the first year in USF 2000. They're quickly making their way up, and they're doing it in a big and bold way. You know, they're out there winning races and mixing it up with everyone. So we're extremely pleased with where we're at overall.
With regards to moving people up, there's got to be seats for them to move up into. And we've talked about how hugely successful USF 2000 has been, the growth in that series is fantastic. I've been telling my colleagues here at Open Paddock that this is really going to be a cool series to watch, as, you know, I'm expecting car counts to be up in the, well, at least the mid-20s, I think, for a lot of the races.
Sure.
Star Mazda, Firestone, Indy Lights seem a little weaker. Star Mazda has, here just in the last couple of weeks, has kind of come up, and we're finally looking at some double-digit numbers in terms of confirmed drivers. Firestone, Indy Lights, well, we only have 6 confirmed right now. Potentially should have more coming, but last year we saw some pretty small grids as well. Is there any concern about the grid size in those two series moving forward?
I mean, I think everything we're hearing right now, Doug, is everything's very positive from both series. We actually just met with the Star Mazda officials today, actually, and are very pleased to hear kind of their initial count of where they think they're at. And you know, I think you'll see them top 20 entries on a regular basis here. And then from an Indy Lights standpoint, we think we're doing really well. Kind of our goal coming into this season was 16 full-time entries. We thought that was very attainable. I think we can do that for sure. We've got some other guys I know that are going to be with us from a partial season standpoint. So if you look at where we were last year at this time, you look at where we're at right now, certainly everything feels like it's on track. And all we can do is go out and continue to build the value of each level of the Mazda Road to Indy, make it attractive for folks to invest their time and money into it. And we think we're doing that. We think we're getting some traction there. And I really feel confident that we're poised for a big year from every series within the Mazda Road to Indy system.
One thing that's made me very happy seeing develop over the off season has been more teams becoming more invested at different levels along the Mazda Road to Indy ladder. We saw Juncos Racing initiate their Firestone Indy Lights team. So we've got teams from the lower ranks starting to get involved in the higher ranks. We've got, well, and even some drivers. EJ Viso just announced partnership with Juncos to bring Venezuelan drivers into Star Mazda. How important to the program is the cross-pollination of the various series with team involvement, having teams involved at different levels of the program?
I think it's huge. I mean, the stronger you can make that, the better off you're going to be from a program standpoint. And you talked about some of the success stories with Juncos expanding into Indy Lights. I know Team Pelfrey has done a great job at the Star Mazda level, and I see he's part of Spencer Pigot's program this year in USF 2000. You look at Andretti, obviously they've had every rung of the ladder since day one. So I think it's huge, and it's a great success story, and it just shows that that there's value at every level here. And as more drivers become interested in making this their career path, you know, we hope to see more teams become involved like we've seen with these other guys.
Well, obviously, Michael Andretti sees something very, very positive about this program. He is, as you say, I think he's the only team owner that's involved at every step of the program. What about the rest of the iSide IndyCar team owners? How do they view this program? Is there some potential interest in getting more of the iSide IndyCar teams involved in the ladder program?
Well, I'm hopeful now that, you know, with the new IndyCar being introduced and now that those team owners understanding what that car is and what it's going to cost, they can now look towards the other levels of the Road to Indy. You know, obviously there's no shortage of quality drivers coming out of the system as we've seen in recent years with graduates. So I think from a driver standpoint, they are seeing value there for sure. I think just that next wave is getting them to look at the team opportunities. And it's on us to build, you know, a system where it benefits them to do that, whether it's testing miles. You know, Indy Lights formerly had a program where drivers could get testing miles at the IndyCar level due to teams having multiple teams within the ladder system or partnerships with teams within the ladder system. So, you know, it's on us, again, to continue to build that value. But I'm hopeful now that we'll see them start to invest more dollars at those levels.
In terms of being pleased with the program, how's Mazda viewed all this? Now they've been involved for, a year and a half, 2 years. What's their take on how this program has gone for them?
I think it's been super successful for them, you know. I mean, from day one, they told us, hey, there's no bigger compliment for us than to see our graduate come compete at the Indy 500 and win. And that's really their goal. You know, they want to give kids those opportunities at the grassroots level and watch them grow into being superstars. And we're seeing that with the drivers today that are doing just that. So that's very exciting for them. And you know, Mazda's all about youth and that young buyer. And what can they do to help them sell more cars, especially to that younger demographic? And I think they see the Mazda Road to Indy program as a great fit just to do that, those things.
You know, I have seen a lot of the drivers that are in the Mazda Road to Indy program doing a lot of, I guess, what I would see as voluntary promotion for Mazda, with Gustavo Menezes and Anders Krohn and several others really talking up Mazda and their cars. Unfortunately, maybe that message isn't getting out to the rest of the world. Mazda reported some pretty big losses in Q3 and Q2 of 2011. Has those setbacks affected their involvement in the Road to Indy?
No, not at all, actually. I mean, I don't want to speak for Mazda and can't speak for Mazda. That's their business. But, you know, we've actually seen an uptick in their investment this year around open wheel racing. So that's very exciting. Obviously, they're traditionally and will always be a sports car company, but I do think that they continue to see more and more value at the open wheel racing levels, and we're seeing you know, additional promotions and activities from them. So all is well from our standpoint.
Well, of course, one of the things that you really want if you're trying to sell product is to get that product in front of as many eyeballs as possible. And right now, in order to follow the Mazda Road to Indy, you really kind of have to be at the track. There's been no television package. There's been no streaming package for any of the series. Well, except for the Firestone Indy Lights, of course. This year, following the Winterfest, find that the USF 2000 series is going to be streaming at least audio, if not video. They're hoping to do video at every venue this year. And there's some rumors about there being a TV deal, perhaps for Star Mazda, perhaps for the entire Mazda Road to Indy coming up here in 2012. Any details you can give us on that?
You know, obviously can't speak, again, can't speak for Mazda, but I do know that's a big goal of theirs is to get the entire ladder system television exposure. And I do know that they're working hard to do just that. So, you know, obviously nothing to announce at this point, nothing firm. Still trying to get things in place, but I do expect that you know, if they can go out and get the job done, they're going to, because I know that's a big priority for them.
That is for the entire program. They're working right now on trying to get some sort of television package in place.
Yeah, that would absolutely be the goal. Yes.
Okay. Well, speaking of TV deals, last year we got most of the Firestone Indy Lights programs. So for the weekends where versus now NBC Sports. That's going to be another one of those jars you have to put a buck into every time you say versus, right? So this year we heard in the state of the series that we're going to get all of the Firestone Indy Lights, all of the events there broadcast. How did that come about, and how important is this for the Firestone Indy Lights teams?
Oh, I think it's huge in both areas. I mean, from a team standpoint, you obviously want as much exposure as possible to make your program attractive to potential sponsors, your current sponsors, and to drivers. So I think it's huge from their standpoint. You know, for the series itself, you know, we really wanted to continue, again, to raise the value of the series, and that only helps our drivers and owners and partners, and we thought this was a great way to do it. You know, like you said, last year we had 8 of those events on TV. This year we'll have all of them, so again, it's just a collective effort here at IndyCar and with our partners to say, hey, there's value in this, and really go out and showcase the product that we have.
Well, one of those events, I was wondering if it might be at Milwaukee. It wasn't on the original schedule, but of course, just recently it was announced that Michael Andretti is going to be the promoter for the iSide IndyCar Series return to the Milwaukee Mile. And of course, as we know, Michael Andretti is deeply invested in the Mazda Road to Indy program. So might we see some additions of the other three series at Milwaukee, not just the iSide IndyCar Series?
I think, again, it's the goal. You know, the situation there at Milwaukee between, you know, track time and whatever Michael and his group's agreement, you know, might be with the State Fair Board there in terms of track rentals going to dictate how much time we have to put the product on track. So, you know, again, don't know exactly how that's going to shake out just yet, but it is the goal to, you know, at least get as much content up there from a Road to Indy standpoint as possible. So I'm sure we'll see here in the coming weeks how that shakes out.
Another couple of comments on the 2012 schedule. There's a big, big gap in the USF 2000 schedule right there during summer. I can't imagine that was intentional.
Yeah, it's not something that was done on purpose per se. It is going to be kind of backfilled with plenty of testing opportunities for the teams. So that from a content standpoint for them and getting out and testing, it'll be a good break for them. It obviously isn't something that we like to see from a scheduling standpoint, just because you do have the big layoff, but. It is what we have to deal with at this time anyway, and like I said, it does give the teams opportunities to test new drivers, and it gives drivers the opportunity to get seat time before they continue on with the schedule.
Well, one last thing on the 2012 schedule is in the Star Mazda series, they have a TBA on the weekend of June 22nd and 24th. Are we working towards an Iowa weekend there?
I think that's the goal. Obviously that isn't in place yet. Otherwise they would have that announced, but just kind of working on some things there. There may be some additional opportunities for them as well. So they're just trying to put the events together that make the most sense for them and are most beneficial for their partners and drivers and teams. So I'm confident here in the next few weeks we'll see them come out with kind of their final version of that schedule, and I think everybody will be pleasantly surprised to see everything.
Well, one thing that came out just today was something that a lot of us think is very, very cool, and that is having heat races at Iowa for the iSod IndyCar Series. If Star Mazda, and I can't remember if Firestone Indy Lights is going to be at Iowa, yes, they will.
Yeah.
Are they planning on doing heat races as well?
Are we going to see
a traditional qualifying for Firestone?
Yeah, I think you'll see traditional qualifying, and it's important to remember. I mean, these kids are all learning. It's a training program at every level, and you don't want to stick too much on them at one time. And we think that hey, as much as they need to learn to get out and race, qualifying for them a lot of times, especially on an oval. As a new thing for a lot of these kids that are coming up through the system. So it's important for them to learn those basics and to be a part of that first and understand that before you try to do too much and get into things like qualifying races. Certainly at the IndyCar level, I think it works great. I think it's a great element for the fans and takes, what traditionally can be a bit stale with single car qualifying, now puts a really cool twist on that. So I think we'll all be watching it to see how it goes, but from a development series standpoint, I think we'll stick to what we have for now.
Well, what else should we be looking forward to for 2012? Any surprises that we may see coming our way?
I think one big thing we want to do is continue the Mazda Road Indy Chris Griffiths Memorial Test that we started last year, or this year, I guess, this past year, for all the Mazda Road Indy teams at Indianapolis. I think that's a great off-season audition platform for these drivers. They can get out there in front of all the team owners and just kind of show them what they have. And it led to a lot of deals coming together for this 2012 season. So I think that's something to watch for. We definitely want to do that again. We also, are taking it on to try to have as many of these other series that are out there, whether it be in Canada and Mexico. How do we really boost that driver pipeline and push a lot of these junior series towards the Mazda Road Indy? Not saying they would actually fall within the ladder system, but how do we create opportunities from drivers, in Mexico and Canada and Europe to head to F2000 and Star Mazda and be part of these programs? So you'll see a lot of work and effort going towards that this year, and hopefully in the coming weeks we'll have some news to report from that area.
Well, I think JUCO's Racing has already kind of showed the way there with their connection with the Chilean Formula 3.
Yeah, no, they have done a great job, and Ricky Juncos is one of the hardest working people in this sport. I think that's a great deal that he's put together. And we saw an extension of that with the Team Viso Venezuela announcement here yesterday. So, I think we can all learn from that and certainly respect what Ricky's doing. And I think, if we can do more of that from a series standpoint, it's just going to make everything, a lot stronger for everybody all across the ladder.
Well, now looking forward down the road, a couple of things, one specific and one general. Very specifically, we've got a new chassis now for the iSod IndyCar series, but we're still using a pretty old tub for the Firestone Indy Lights. Is there a plan in the works to come up with a new car, a new chassis for the Firestone Indy Lights series in 2013? And then lastly, where do you see the program going post-2012, provided that we survive the apocalypse?
Good point. No, from an Indy Lights standpoint, our goal is to introduce a new car for the 2014 racing season. We had originally outlined that we wanted to try to do that for 2013. The timeline is just a little too aggressive to do that because, you know, really when you get into those things, you have one shot to do it right and do it well. And we felt 2014 gave us that opportunity. So we're definitely pushing towards that to happen. In terms of looking past 2012, you know, we just want to see more growth at every level. We're not going to rest until, you know, the Monza Road Indy is internationally recognized and a place for all drivers to come and all teams to come and all partners to come. So, you know, we look forward to that day.
Well, Jason, thank you very much for your insight and thank you for joining us today. We really appreciate your time.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.